This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Kathy Sakahara, Vice President of Advocacy for the League of Women Voters of Washington. Kathy Sakahara is here today to tell us about Initiative 1464, the 2016 Washington Government Accountability Act, a proposal to restore public trust and confidence in our state government. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Diane. It's a pleasure to be here.
Would you begin by saying a few words about the League of Women Voters?
The League of Women Voters is a national organization, although I serve at the state level across Washington. And we are 96 years old. We are actually the daughters of the suffragist movement. So we were formed out of the effort to win women the right to vote. And our mission is to educate voters and the general public and to empower them to be more engaged in our democracy. And we've been working on that for 96 years. We do that through public education, such as forums and online resources. We also advocate, as we did from the time of women's suffrage. We've been advocating for voters' rights and citizens' rights and good government for all that time.
Would you also like to say a few words about the League of Women Voters of Washington?
So the League of Women Voters of Washington, we are proud to have 1,800 members, although we have many more than that who are engaged with us as volunteers at our events or at least reading our materials. We have 20, and I think soon we will have 21 local leagues in Washington. So we have huge leagues such as Seattle, King County, and we have smaller leagues from Kittitas to Tri-Cities to Grays Harbor.
Why is Initiative 1464 being proposed? Why do we need this initiative?
We need this initiative because we see that people are losing faith in their government. The average voter feels as if they have no power and no influence due to the huge influence of big money. Citizens United didn't create that problem, but it certainly added to it. And by Citizens United, I'm, of course, referring to the Supreme Court decision that sort of okayed unlimited spending in campaigns.
Would you speak about the recent State Integrity Investigation Report that was published by the Center for Public Integrity?
Yes, that was very disappointing. That's a very well-respected national organization, and they gave Washington across the board a D-plus rating, not something any of us would be proud to have on our report card. And they did that mostly for two reasons where we fell very low. One was in transparency, that is, the ability for citizens to know who is paying for elections. And the other is our systems for deterring corruption. That is, things that would make it more difficult and not encourage people, in fact, to engage in corrupt behavior. And, of course, the League was shocked by that. The Washington League was shocked by that rating. And we've been looking for ways to change that rating. And Initiative 1464 is a perfect example of one way to do that.
Would you go into more detail about some of the drawbacks of Washington State's system that led to the D-plus rating?
Well, one is, as I said, not having good deterrence against corruption. One of the problems is that lobbyists can not only make huge contributions to candidates as well as to PACs or independent expenditures, they can also raise money for candidates. So while they don't literally bundle them and hand them to a candidate one time, for instance, many lobbyists hold fundraisers and raise huge amount of money from the same people that they're lobbying and asking to make decisions.
What is the history of ethics, integrity, and accountability in Washington State?
Well, there have been various attempts. Most recently, many of the aspects of 1464 have been introduced as individual pieces of legislation. For instance, just this past year, the Attorney General requested legislation that would close the revolving door, which is somebody working for the government one day, showing up next Monday as a lobbyist, and then lobbying the same people that they were just working for. Those bills get polite hearings in the legislature, and there are other examples of bills that have been introduced. They sometimes get polite hearings, but they never seem to go anywhere. We're dependent on legislators to make that decision. And what's exciting about 1464 is we're taking this straight to the people because we know the people want stronger ethics rules.
What specifically does Initiative 1464 propose? Before we go into more detail, would you first give us just an overview?
Okay. Well, first, it strengthens transparency and accountability. It also empowers the average voter and invites them and encourages them to be more active participants in politics. It also strengthens campaign finance and enforcement rules, and it puts strict limits on lobbyists and also public contractors and the level of donations that they can give to legislators.
So now let's go into more detail about each of those topics that you outlined. How will political transparency be increased by Initiative 1464? What are the specific steps that are proposed?
Well, one of the specific steps is right now we have a law that if you're doing an independent expenditure, you're running a campaign ad, you have to list the top five donors. And if you look closely at those top five donors, they often have names like Citizens for Good Government or Washingtonians for Motherhood and Apple Pie. And that is, it's just a fake organization with a very pleasant sounding name with lots of buzzwords, but it doesn't really tell you who's paying for it. What this would do is change it so that if that is the top contributor, you actually have to go and look at who contributes to that organization and continue that until you get the name of the top five people so you can identify who's really paying for campaign ads.
Are there additional steps to help political transparency?
There is another one, which is, and it seems so simple and sort of so obvious in this day and age. Right now, people, both candidates and lobbyists, have to provide information to the PDC, the Public Disclosure Commission. Far too often, they're provided in a written document. So a lobbyist will say, this is who I've spent money wining and dining, and it's a written document. Well, a written document is not really data. You can't search it. You can't combine it. You can't put it in a spreadsheet. It's basically a picture. Often, those reports are incomplete, and the handwriting is unreadable. Now, whether or not that's deliberate or accidental, I don't know that for a fact, but it certainly raises concerns. So this initiative would require simply that those files be provided electronically so that they can be treated like data. They can be searched. They can be manipulated.
Now let's talk about how the influence of big money will be reduced if Initiative 1464 goes into effect. You've said a few things about that. Yes.
Well, number one, as I mentioned, the limitation on contributions from lobbyists. Also, limitations on contributions from contractors. And this is not a small contractor who maybe wants to run a training session for some state agency, but large contractors who are competing for bids and at the same time can be making contributions to the legislators that are involved in that decision. That's a very serious concern. The other is we do have laws right now that outlaw what's considered coordination, which is a candidate can raise money. There can be a separate PAC that raises money to support that candidate, but they can't be coordinated in any way. This not only strengthens that and clarifies the rule, it also increases the penalty for violation. The penalty for violation was set in 1970-something, I think 75. It's never been adjusted for inflation, so this would actually raise the maximum penalty five times. Again, more of a deterrence for corrupt behavior.
Are there additional steps to reduce the influence of big money in Initiative 1464?
Well, indirectly, I think a very exciting one is one of the reasons for the influence of big money is something I talked about very early on, which is the discouragement and lack of political efficacy that people feel in the political process. The result of that discouragement is that people are less engaged. Individuals are less engaged. Last year, we had a record low turnout in the state of, I believe, 33% of registered voters came out to vote. And we tie that to big money. And the more that individual citizens get involved, and in this case can also get involved financially, the less influence big money will have because they'll be operating in less of a vacuum.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Kathy Sakahara, Vice President of Advocacy for the League of Women Voters of Washington. Our topic is Initiative 1464, the 2016 Washington Government Accountability Act, a proposal to restore public trust and confidence in our state government. And you are tuned to the Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. How will voter participation be encouraged and small donors be empowered?
Well, a major way that we will do that is through democracy credits, which means that each voter will be provided three $50 credits that they can then donate to the candidate of their choice. We know that very small percentage of people get involved in donations. And this will encourage them not only to make those donations, but before they make that donation, they're going to do more research. They're going to interview more candidates. They're going to talk to candidates. We think that will get them looking at candidates earlier and more closely because they want to decide who is going to best represent them. They want to do, frankly, what big money people do, which is I'm going to give my money to the person who represents me. But that means the candidates now are getting money from individuals and are more inclined to represent them as opposed to the huge, powerful donors.
So this is similar to the Seattle initiative that passed.
It has a lot of similarities. It's certainly not the same thing, but the concept of democracy credits is similar. We saw that that was passed overwhelmingly in Seattle last year, and this has slightly different mechanics, but that concept applies as well.
How about the size of donations that can be made?
Well, we don't change the limits across the board, except, as we said, for lobbyists and public contractors. But in order to receive democracy credits, to receive that money, a candidate must opt into the system. And part of what they must agree to is that they will have a campaign limit that is half of whatever the campaign limit is for a given office.
How will ethics and campaign finance laws be better enforced?
One of them I mentioned already, which is increasing the fine that hadn't been changed since the 70s. It also empowers citizens if, for instance, shortly before an election, something goes on and I see it. At any time, I can report it to the PDC or to the Attorney General, and they can choose whether or not to pursue it. If they don't pursue it, I can pursue it. And in fact, if it's 60 days before the election, they have only 10 days to act on it before I have the option of saying, wait a minute, they're not doing anything about it. I'm going to do something and take this to court myself. So it empowers individual citizens. It also gives more teeth to investigations by both the Attorney General and the PDC. The PDC, again, is the Public Disclosure Commission. The PDC does a phenomenal job with an unbelievably small budget. One of the things this would do, because the Public Disclosure Commission would be administering this program, is it would give them additional infrastructure, gives them money to go out and investigate. Right now, it's kind of common knowledge that when there are complaints about a campaign, often they don't get investigated because there simply isn't the person power at the Public Disclosure Commission because, again, they are funded by the legislature. So their power is totally dependent right now on the legislature, and we'd like to change that.
In addition to the League, who or what groups are supporting Initiative 1464?
That is one of my favorite parts about this and something that was at least for me surprising and maybe for other people. We have a group called Progress Alliance, which is a well-known progressive group in downtown Seattle. We also have leaders of the Tea Party. We have leaders of mainstream Republicans. This is honestly, in my political career, the most diverse group that I have worked with. And I talk to liberals and progressives, and they think this is a progressive idea. And when I talk to conservatives, they think this is a conservative position because everybody, regardless of their particular political ideology, anyone that wants to empower citizens knows that the system is corrupting. If not corrupt, it is corrupting. It has huge potential for corruption, and they want to change it. And so I'm very proud to serve on the steering committee with, as I said, representatives from mainstream Republicans and Tea Party Republicans.
How did these people come together? What is the history of how the initiative got put together?
Well, it was initiated by a group called Represent Us, who had some involvement in the Seattle Initiative, but was not the main driving force for it. And this is a group of conservatives, libertarians, independents, and liberals who have been working nationwide to look at and study not only what are the problems, but what are the solutions for campaign finance. I think a lot of people recognize that with the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United, a lot of the rules we'd like to make, our hands are sort of tied. And they've been researching this, so they initiated the idea, and they reached out to the league as well as other leaders here, again, on both sides of the aisle, and they sort of started the process of bringing us together. But once they got a few of us together, we've sort of taken over, and we are now doing the outreach and spreading the word about it, inviting others in.
Where does the funding for Initiative 1464 come from?
Well, ultimately, it will come from Washington donors, both big and small, I have to say. Initially, we sort of need seed money to get the ball rolling, and Represent Us did provide some initial seed money, but they are not prepared to fund the whole thing. It is very clear that we need to raise the money locally, and we've just sort of started that process, but it is looking very good. This is something that I haven't met a person who says, no, this is not a good idea.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Kathy Sakahara, Vice President of Advocacy for the League of Women Voters of Washington. Our topic is Initiative 1464, the 2016 Washington Government Accountability Act, a proposal to restore public trust and confidence in our state government. What kind of response are you getting to 1464 so far?
It has been overwhelmingly positive. In fact, my daughter is collecting signatures for it. And she called me last night. She said, Mom, this is so easy. I don't even have to finish my sentence. And people are saying, where do I sign? Where do I sign? As I said, it's across the board politically. Just about everyone recognizes that this is a severe problem. I think I've seen some polls that suggest 97% of the population thinks money in politics is a problem and it makes them less powerful and they'd like to be more powerful. So the reception has been positive. We couldn't ask for more. We just sort of need to get the word out about what it does and how much it will help.
What is your process and timeline for getting Initiative 1464 on the November ballot?
Well, the first deadline is on July 8th. We need to submit 250,000 valid signatures, and that has to be of registered voters. So our focus right now, both in the league and throughout the campaign, is on collecting those signatures and reaching out to people that we would expect to care about this issue and asking them to sign on.
If passed by the voters, when would Initiative 1464 go into effect?
It would go into effect for the 2018 election.
And who would monitor the law once it is passed?
The law would be monitored and actually administered by the Public Disclosure Commission. And that is one area in Washington that we have something to be very proud of. We do have an excellent Public Disclosure Commission, which, by the way, was set up by a citizen initiative. It was not set up by legislators. And I have to say the League of Women Voters was one of the prime organizers behind that one as well.
Well, you've been alluding to this throughout the interview, but how will Initiative 1464 enhance democracy?
Well, democracy is dependent on citizens who are involved, who want to be involved, and I think who believe that their involvement makes a difference. And that is the major obstacle we have right now. And the sad irony is that if someone believes that money is running the system and their voice doesn't count, that sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because they withdraw. They say, there's no point in voting. There's no point in being involved. And every time one individual does that, the truth is that those who have power now, those with money and influence, get more power because we're giving it up to them. And the League is all about empowering citizens, and that's why this particular initiative is such a perfect fit for us.
To what extent are other states or municipalities trying similar initiatives?
This has been done in other states and municipalities, and again, it's different pieces of it. For instance, we know that there are 13 other states where contributions from lobbyists are limited, and 17 where contributions from public contractors are limited. In terms of the public financing, a number of states have done that, and they're sort of diverse. They're anywhere from California, which we think, you know, the left coast, to North Carolina and Alaska. Those states have implemented strict regulations. Some states have different formats of providing public financing. In New York, for instance, it's a 6-to-1 match. So if I make a contribution and I report it to the state makes a contribution 6 times the size of mine. In Minnesota, they do it through a tax credit. And this system really operates in a way, I think, that is similar to a tax credit, except because we don't have income tax, I can't just put on my income tax form, I gave $100, I want that money back from the state. So this is a more proactive way of doing it, but it works in a way that's similar to what a state like Minnesota and others have done. And we've seen that that works. We've seen the number of people involved in elections has gone up. And across the board, Minnesota just has a much stronger sort of civic engagement ethos, if you will.
Looking long term, are your plans to try to implement this sort of thing at the national level?
That would be ideal. Absolutely. Of course, we don't have citizen-driven initiatives. So we are dependent on legislators. And what that means is we are dependent on having legislators that are accountable to citizens, not to the wealthy. And so by starting it out in some cases cities, but in this case in a state, we're sort of building the public will and changing the culture around it and showing people the government works better when it's not dominated by the rich and powerful.
Would you like to say a few words about the new study of money and politics that the League has just published?
Yes. Well, actually, this whole thing took about 2 years, and this is the National League of Women Voters. The League takes positions on issues, and we do that only after a lengthy study that can be done at a local, state, or national level. The concern about money and politics was such that the National League took that on, and what that meant is there was study materials available and League members all across the country, down to the neighborhood level, would get together and discuss the issues. They came together and came up with consensus. And just last Thursday, hot off the press, the National League released their recommendations. And I have to tell you, because I've been so involved in 1464 and this initiative, when I looked at the recommendations, it looks like this initiative. It was sort of public financing, limitations on lobbyists, limitations on contractors, extended transparency and accountability. So the positions that the League took were frankly not a surprise. But one thing I think many people may not realize about the League of Women Voters, when we get involved in advocacy, it's not based on, oh, I'm on the board and I think this is a good idea to support this. We only take positions after we have studied something like this for a year. So even though I might look at it and say, well, these things are all kind of obvious, it's typical of the very cautious and studious way that the League goes about in developing their positions.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That you are important. As a citizen, as a voter, you have a role to play. And please do not give up the voice that you have. One of the things I love is that it might be true that money is powerful in politics, but the individual citizen voice does a lot. We see that in some of the presidential campaigns, the power of enthusiasm, the power of passion, and the power of the average voter. And you do have a role to play, and with your support in the passage of 1464, that role will be even greater, and you will have a bigger and louder voice.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Diane.
You were just listening to Kathy Sakahara, Vice President of Advocacy for the League of Women Voters of Washington. For more information, check on the web at integritywashington.org. Again, that's integritywashington.org. The Sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.